Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I love theme tunes. I mean, the thing that you see there is how versatile theme tunes can be. And one of my favourites is the Match of the Day. You know, the theme tune.
Very nice.
Very nice. But you can play it in a variety of different ways. It sort of lends itself to the classical genre. You know.
Lovely.
You know, that's very nice. I also personally prefer the lounge version. You know, it's a much more sort of relaxed version. Yeah. I don't know whether the band can join in here. Yeah. So let's try it.
Oh, yeah! All right!
In Ireland, as I call it, you know, that guy from the Shankill Road who is supported back to the hilt by BBC Northern Ireland, which, as Trevor Burney said last week, you know, continues to more or less have the same religious makeup as it always did at management level. And you've got every day now, instead of the sea border, the invisible sea border, now we've got casement, you know. And the idea of that is simply to drum up sectarian tension. And of course, now that we know that the cost of the stadium has been meticulously costed at just shy of 200 million. But the deal.
Well, has it? Because there was a story last week. There was a story last week on UTV that it was now estimated at 308 million sterling. No.
The DUP are now briefing against the project. Now you just think
this was a letter from Chris Eaton Harris to Gordon Lyons.
Yeah, that's where he's getting
Secretary
the briefing.
Of State.
And you know, it's all this now. Oh, you know, scare thing. As Squinter in the Andytown News said, oh no, you know, the new cost is £200 billion. like Austin Power, £200 billion.
Well, you see, there is an important but kind of prosaic enough point to make that you have to kind of at all times make it clear that you're not going to pay any price for a project because you are trying to get people to do it, you know, who are tendering.
It's sitting at about 200, and for a stadium of this kind now, at this point in time, you know, if I come back to the point, you know, this is the consequences of the unionist community destroying the Mays project. This is the consequences. And Robbie Butler and all these people who are going around now wringing their hands, you know, all these unionists who were going around talking about, we will not have a terrorist shrine as our national sporting stadium, you know, and the Windsor Park faithful, up to our knees in Fenian blood, surrender or you'll die, for we are the Billy Billy boys. No casement, shove casement up your hole. Well, this is where shoving casement up your hole gets you. Look, and this is the reality of it. The GAA completely supported this, you know, and the GAA has always had its hand out to rugby and to soccer. I mean, the new president of the GAA, Jarlis Burns, a very proud South Armagh man, a very proud Republican, and a great Irish speaker. I got bloody Fenians learning Irish, you know, that's your linguistic terrorism. They're linguistic terrorists as well.
Then it comes Gregory Campbell.
Curry my yogurt, can cook a cooler. Could I ask the minister, she's outlined what she's talking about in terms of the Irish language strategy and an Ulster Scots strategy. Would it not be more inclusive to have a minority languages strategy so that nobody feels left out?
I mean, his first official act was, along with Michelle O'Neill, to be a guest of the IFA at the recent Northern Ireland Ladies International game in Windsor Park. And of course they'll be there, and they'd love to be there. And I have to say, I was delighted to see our own, because she's a practicing barrister, our own Mrs. Little Pengelly there. And I have no doubt about this. I mean this sincerely. You know, obviously, there's a constituency there that's holding the people who want to lead back. We saw that with Edwin Pitts, with Dr. Paisley, with Peter Robinson then, you know. Let me just finish this one point. Mrs. Little Pengelly wants to do business. I mean, she's very, very well thought of at the bar, very popular, and she wants to do business. You know, it is frustrating that we have to go through this.
But Joe, let me make a point on that, just because I think it is something that is worth underlining, because you see the popularity of Michelle O'Neill now across the island in this Sunday Independent poll. And you can see the power of what Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little Pengelly are doing in these those important symbolic gestures of turning up to things together, turning up to PSNI stations, going to soccer matches, we saw Jarlath Burns presenting her with a Armagh scarf, and she made it, lame enough, but funny, well-intentioned joke about the orange and all that kind of stuff. And it's great. And it actually you can see that people are responding to it because they're so tired of all the other stuff. And yet there does seem to be a constituency that says, well, if it means blowing up, pardon the expression, but if it means blowing up the Euros bid, or Euros being in Northern Ireland, and if the price to be paid for not having a state-of-the-art Casement Park is no Euros, then we'll do this self-destructive act, because Aaron Edwards called it that zero-sum game of a certain strand of unionism.
Yeah, I mean it's the death throes of supremacy. You know, it's what happens with a supremacist society, where in due course becomes a democracy, and then people are treated as equal under the law. You know, we have equal rights, we have our human rights, we've got all sorts of legislation that protects every person, every side of the community. And it's just a mindset that changes only over time, but particularly with exposure, people from the other community. That's the big thing. And that's why the Maze Project was a brilliant idea, because it inevitably just fired everybody together. And it took all the venom out of it. You know, at that stage, I mean, who can forget a night in November whenever Republic of Ireland played the North in Windsor Park? The terror of that night.
1993, yeah.
Yeah, the terror of that night, you know, just after two or three terrible, terrible massacres committed by both sides. And then the Grey Steel Massacre, where Protestant and Catholics who had been drinking together in a very mixed community at Grey Steel there out at Fawnville, where Ryan Feeney's from, who we talked about, and which had a central impact on Ryan's career since then, you know, and was something that has remained with him as an abiding principle. I mean, you're talking about a guy who did more than anyone. I mean, he was the one who met with loyalist paramilitaries along with Martin McAleese, Professor Mary McAleese, the president of Ireland's husband, brought them to All-Ireland finals, brought them to All-Ireland semi-finals, had endless meetings with, taught them about community build, how the GAA worked, actually offered, as Ryan says, to set up a Protestant GAA. But, you know,
how is that going to work?
The point is that these, you look at that night in Windsor Park, for example, where the Irish team were shaking, Jack Charlton was very shaken, and he had never experienced this sort of hatred before, where they were singing Trick or Treat, which is what the gunmen shouted when they went into the Rising Sun Bar in Greysteale before they murdered several people of all ages and religions. Trick or Treat, because they were wearing balaclavas, etc. You see, and it was Halloween, and the Northern Ireland fans chanted that. So what you've got to do is you've got to get them out of that. You've got to get them out of that milieu where it's they're reinforced by everything that's around them in their sectarianism. That's why the maze was such a brilliant idea. Now we're just having to take a circuitous route. I think what needs to happen now for me is, and I think it will happen. I mean, you know what I think of our Uachtaráin and Jarlath Burns. And I think that we need people to do what Ryan Feeney did with the previous deal. I mean, it was Feeney, Tom Daly, Danny Murphy, Martin McGuinness, and Peter Robinson who did the previous deal for the three stadia. You know, and what we need now is for a similar deal to be done. And what I envisage is that in and around 60 million, an additional 60 million will be made available for regional soccer grounds, regional soccer facilities. Obviously, from Ulster Rugby's point of view, they will have a much smaller ask because of their much smaller playing community. But a thing to understand is this, Dion. The GAA, as Carol Kane, a good drum man from my own parish, wrote in the Irish News a few weeks ago, he said, like, the GAA has always paid its own way. That's the difference between the GAA, soccer and rugby. You know, so they're reliant on the state to provide their facilities, their grounds, etc. Every GAA community in the north has state-of-the-art pitches, grounds, floodlights, facilities. We run them ourselves, you know. And what we do in the north, what we do in Ireland in general, look at the most recent ESRI report. We keep our young people out of trouble. We keep them away from criminality. You know, we keep them in the straight and narrow. They all become good members of society. You know, we do the job of the justice system and the police. We save the state a fortune with our activities. And on top of that, we pay our own way. So the Casement Park thing's an exception. And the reason the Casement Park has to be built now is because unionists destroyed the maze project. And Casement Park will be built and it'll be made available to the other sports. And in due course, a bit like the invisible sea border, there won't be a word about any of this. But I think the death throes of that horrific old sort of murderous apartheid that we lived under are also being seen today when we're recording in what happened today in Sean Brown's inquest, where Mr. Justice Kinney said, look, I have reached the decision. This inquest cannot proceed. And that's because it has emerged that the 25 suspects of the 25 suspects in his murder, including leading loyal paramilitaries who were arrested at the time and interviewed but released, that of those 25, a significant number of them were state agents at the time of the murder. And the UK government have made a significant number of public interest immunity applications to the coroner, which means that Mr. Justice Kinney has taken the extraordinary step of saying, look, I can't continue with this because I have to grant these. And it means that the truth cannot be found. He said, I'm just trying to find what he said here. Give me a wee second. He said, this decision will cause terrible pain and anguish for the Brown family. This was an entirely innocent man. He was the subject of a planned execution. You, his family, have fought for truth and justice for almost three decades, and I have reached this decision with deep, deep regret. A public inquiry is now the only way to consider the circumstance of Mr. Brown's murder. And he absolutely lambasted the state. Let me just give you some of the wee bits. He said, "This inquest cannot continue because of material that is being withheld on the supposed grounds of national security." He described the behaviour of the state as deplorable and frankly inexcusable. Deplorable is very strong language. And, you know, you think of the departure this means for our judiciary from 30 years ago, whenever the whole system of internment and of special powers and all was being, you know, just freely deployed. He said that "I am satisfied that my duty to carry out a full, fair and fearless investigation into Mr. Brown's death is seriously compromised, as issues of central importance to his death cannot any longer be dealt with by this process. And in these circumstances, and with great regret, I am discontinuing this inquest. To continue with it would inevitably result in a process that was incomplete, inadequate and misleading."
And, so, Joe, can you explain that for people? Why an inquest can't deal with this, and why he's calling for a public inquiry?
Okay. So once a no publicity, essentially a public interest immunity, a no publicity order. Okay, that means that it could only be dealt with in secret proceedings, which are not published, not broadcast. Okay. So a public inquiry can do that. You can have a closed hearing part of a public inquiry, but you can't do that in an inquest, obviously.
Right.
Okay, so that's why the Mr. Justice Kinney, who'd be a very, very well thought of judge, it goes without saying, has said, "Look, that with great regret, this process can't proceed because essentially it would be a travesty." You know, I mean, and you think about that, and all the links back to up. You know, all how interwoven we are in the North. So Sean Brown, Park and Blahy, I mean, my beloved cousin was married to Danny Quinn from Blahy, one of their stalwarts. I played with Damien Brown, Sean's son, the Derry under-21s. You know, fabulous footballer, mischievous and doughty and tough and courageous, you know. Damien, over 25 years, was at 30 preliminary hearings to try and force some sort of hearing to find out what had happened to his father. You know, his father was murdered when he was locking up the Blahy pitch one night. And he was the chairman and he was beloved. You know, and Damien has died tragically before he'll see any public inquiry. You know, and this is what they do. They run the clock down. I mean, Declan, Sean's grandson, the day of his father's funeral, he played with Blahy against Newbridge at the championship. At the final whistle, when they won, his teammates ran to him and embraced him. You know, and you think about that. He was murdered May 97. And that hangs over the Blahy community like a shroud. And it hangs over the Derry community like a shroud. He's not the only one. Countless people were murdered, you know. We've talked about that before. And, I mean, as far back as 2004, Nuala O'Loan, who was the ombudsman at that stage, and of course she was absolutely loathed by the unionist community, you know, her credentials were and are absolutely impeccable. I mean, cigarette butts close to the body where he was beaten and shot hadn't been DNA tested. They were discarded. There was no proper investigation, she found. A witness came forward. He wasn't even interviewed by the police and has since died. Security camera footage wasn't watched and went missing. The history of the murder weapon wasn't investigated. The murder file went missing. You know. And, I mean, I think even worse than that, even worse than all of that, you know, it was confirmed by Joe Aiken, who's the counsel for the coroner, that of the 25 suspects, okay, several of them were state agents at the time. And as Niall Murphy, who's a good friend of mine, a great GA man, you know, a great supporter of the Irish language and all that, and has worked tirelessly to set up the Bunscoil in the grounds of his club, he said this morning outside courts, he said, we should be frightened by what we know about his murder, but we should be terrified by what we do not know.
Today's judgment is an affront to the concept of public justice, and every member of society should be terrified at what has gone on in this case. The judge referred to the state actions as deplorable, inexcusable, that left his process incomplete, inadequate, misleading. And it really goes to the heart of the sanctity of the rule of law. Why, this family ask, have MI5 applied for 3 public interest immunity certificates on the grounds of national security? Why did one of the suspects have a personal protection weapon? Because we know who has personal protection weapons in this society. Why has there been no prosecutions? A serving then member of the Royal Irish Regiment was a suspect. Siobhan has spoken this morning of surveillance being conducted right up until the night before the murder, and then a decision was taken by someone to suspend that and was only picked up again after the murder. The dignity that this family have invested in this process can only be matched by the depravity of the state actors who have executed the murder, but most egregiously then covered it up. And the only legal forum that can manage the details in this case is a public inquiry.
There's a serving member of the British Army who was a key suspect. One of the most notorious loyalist paramilitary killers of the Troubles, Mark Fulton, his nickname was Swinger, Mark Swinger Fulton. Don't know why he was called that. It was confirmed today at the inquest that surveillance had been conducted on him right up until the night before the murder of Sean Brown. It was suspended throughout the day of the murder and resumed the following day.
Yeah, extraordinary. It's really
fucking
extraordinary.
Sick with her. Fucking sick. That's what that. Same with John, my good friend John, you know, he's the director of strategy of Sinn Féin. John's dad, same thing, you know. They had roadblocks. They let the killers through. They let them away again. You know, the killers subsequently confessed. You know,
when Sean Brown was murdered, Seamus Heaney, who was another Ballaghy man, wrote a letter to the Irish News about him. And it's worth quoting because, you know, it gives some indication of the qualities you've talked about of Sean Brown. And he said he was a man of integrity and goodwill, qualities which were manifest when he presided at an event organized by the club in January last year to celebrate the award of the Nobel Prize to this particular Ballaghy man. Many things were precious about that evening, Heaney said, including Sean's presentation to me of a painting of Loch Beg. But the other thing that Heaney stressed was the most important thing was the fact that it was attended, this event, by people from both sides of the Ballaghy community, Protestant and Catholic. He said Sean Brown represented something better than we have grown used to, something not quite covered by the word reconciliation, because that word has become a policy word, official and public. This was more like a purification, a release from what the Greeks called the miasma, the stain of spilled blood. It is a terrible irony that the man who organized such an event should die at the hands of a sectarian killer.
And it was that it exemplified that contempt, that supremacy, that contempt. Because don't forget that those boys who murdered Sean, you know, they could have easily been born in my community. You know, and it's your community that shapes you. And, you know, it suited the British initially to create this colony. And, you know, in the end, in the end, that's where the fault lies. You know, we see what they've done everywhere around the world. But he, in that letter, I wasn't aware of that letter, and it's very powerful. I agree. The reason that he was talking about, you know, Greek mythology and that at that stage was that he'd been spending a lot of time there. And I think, in fact, I'm certain, because he wrote the poem, The Augean Stables, about Sean, that he was in Greece at the time of the murder.
That's right. He heard it when he was in Greece. He just visited the ancient Olympic Stadium.
And you know the story about King Augeas? You see, one of the labors of Hercules was that he had to clean King Augeas's stables, which were filthy. And what he did was he diverted the river Alpheus. He diverted the river because he was so powerful, Hercules. He diverted the river Alpheus through the stable. And Heaney was thinking about that when he wrote the poem. I remember, you know, it was there in Olympia down among green willows, the lustral wash and run of river shallows, that we heard of John Brown's murder in the grounds of the Lahigea, and imagined hose water smashing hard back off the asphalt in the car park where his athlete's blood ran cold.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And you mentioned Loch Beg as well. And you think about that, the link there. So he was presented with a
painting of Loch Beg.
Painting of Loch Beg by Sean Brown whenever he won his Nobel Prize. I can't remember who it was that went to it. It must have been my father who went to it, God rest. Seamus did a poetry reading, as he did now and again, in the Blahy Club. And he was reading his own poetry, and the club was packed, of course. But it was all locals, you know. My father said that the notable thing about it was all the owl boys coming in with their thumbed copies of Heaney's poetry book.
Right.
You know, just how natural, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Seamus, like all the GA folk, you know, he's just part of the community and no big fuss was made of. But Seamus's cousin Colum was murdered coming from Croke Park with another.
Yeah.
GA man Sean Farmer, and they were killed by that notorious Glen Ann gang, you know, who John Muir, who was in the Royal Ulster Constabulary, later gave, you know, he made a full confession outlining the extent of the collusion of the state in their mass murder campaign. I mean, they killed up to 200 people. And an RUC man called Lawrence McClure, the UDR man, I think his name was McConnell. I'll have to take a look. They've been part of that murder team of the two lads coming from Croke Park. And Heaney wrote a poem about that murder as well. I don't, and It was a beautiful poem. They were diverted off the road and they thought it was a UDR patrol. Now, as it turned out, it was part UDR. And, they were just, on the game.
Yeah.
That was just the way things were, you know. I mean, Ian Blair, the ex-Metropolitan Police Commissioner, he described the Royal Ulster Constabulary whenever he was here. Because, I mean, a bit like those BBC grandees who came over to the North and were shocked at the sectarianism and the suppression of the truth. I mean, two eminent sort of English chief constables came over here and got nowhere. You know, when they were trying to investigate collusion. But Ian Blair, the Metropolitan Police Commissioner, he described the REC as, quote, an almost completely paramilitary organization. And this treatment that the family of Sean Brown has had, you know, it's shocking. And something like that must never happen again. And that's one thing about us, you know, it will not happen again. You know, they have protected these killers over the years. They have protected their own system, the Brits. But that's the one good thing. You know, it's not going to happen again.
Well, we saw as well the judgment, of Mr. Justice Colton in the High Court in Belfast last week. On the Legacy Act, where he ruled that it was
incompatible.
Some of it was incompatible with the European Convention on Human Rights, and like Heaton Harris has kept insisting that, you know, this won't make any difference, but it's surely a significant ruling and a significant judgment against them.
I mean, they're just thugs. The current Tory party are just thugs. You know, you couldn't believe anything that they say. They'll say anything. I mean, Rishi Sunak's completely bankrupt. You know, he'd say anything. It's funny, you know, how people become very wealthy and live in that Eton and, you know, that sort of society that those Tory politicians come from, you know, and then they encourage the thugs like Lee Anderson and people like that. But they're just liars and thugs, and you couldn't listen, you know, you can't believe anything that they say. I mean, Heaton Harris will say anything. I mean, last week, for example, whenever Lee Anderson was suspended by the Tory party, the word that was sent out to say was, look, you know, they had to suspend, but outrageous Islamophobic comment about Sadiq Khan. And the word that was sent out, don't say it's Islamophobia, just say what he said was wrong. So immediately they just parrot that line, you know, and they are a travesty of what our representatives should be. Can you look at, you look at, that you can, where on a recent poll, 85% of people believe that Israel were committing genocide and that there should be an immediate ceasefire. And yet look at how the political classes, Keir Starmer, Rishi Sunak, the Labour Party, are protecting Israel. And, they're morally banked. My fervent hope about our society, North and South, is that, you know, when we get up and running properly, that we're going to keep that sense of idealism, altruism, and working for the common good. That really, genuinely, and I know we have problems, every political system has problems, but that really genuinely has been at the heart of what we've been trying to do, you know, in the South and in the North, once we get a real politic up and going, you know, I'm very optimistic that we can do things well. I wanted to say one other thing, before we finish off today.
Okay. I'll allow you to finish on this.
Thank you very much, Dion. I wanted to say that, you know, I don't know if you noticed whenever Sean Brown's family came outside the Belfast courts this morning after Mr. Justice Kinney had made his decision that it was pointless to continue with an inquest because he had been thwarted, you know, because the information couldn't be put before the public. And there was no way to arrive at anything other than a travesty of a decision as things stood, and that there must be a public inquiry. I don't know if you noticed who was standing in the background outside afterwards with the families.
I was going to mention a couple of people who were there. Charlotte Burns
was there, you know. Mm. And Charlotte, you know, has supported the PSNI. He has extended the hand of friendship. I think he's going to be a wonderful president for us. I think he's going to be active. I think that he couldn't be coming in at a more important time, you know, and I just want to sort of mark the pride that I think Northern Gaels have, people from our communities have, that Jarlath is the president, one of us. Another big step forward, we think, you know, and the fact that he will be progressive, non-sectarian, you know, all the things that we want to be, you know, the ideal for us. And you know, it looks as though we're going to have to drag the unionist community or large sections of it kicking and screaming into the future. But we will do that, brother.
You know? And I think Jarlath,
that's what we do. We've got broad shoulders, you know, and that's why the sort of constant lambasting of the Northern Nationalists and the Southern media, you know, the constant way of presenting us as subversive and dangerous and, you know, not to be trusted with the economy as if we're fucking dimwits, you know. And I think that, you know, all these developments that are happening, you know, politically, I'm with the GAA, I'm with our society in the North, you know, give a remarkable opportunity to this society to move towards something very special in the future.
Well, I don't want to, every week, I'm not sure we can keep saying what a great, hopeful figure Jarlath is, but I think I did a long interview with Jarlath a few years ago in my old podcast, and he is an extraordinary person because, as you said, where he comes from and being totally rooted in that community, and he is also somebody who is just a beacon in terms of non-sectarianism. Reconciliation, for without using that policy word, and just bringing people together and understanding. And I think he's going to be. I noticed that when I read the piece on the Sean Brown inquest that he was there, and he's going to be. I think he's going to be a huge figure in Ireland over the next few years and beyond, not just for the term of his presidency, but for a lot longer than that. And we will. Leave it there, and thank you everybody for listening once again.
What blazed ahead of you? A faked roadblock. The red lamp swung, the sudden brakes and stalling engine, voices, heads hooded, and the cold-nosed gun. Or in your driving mirror, tailing headlights that pulled out suddenly and flagged you down where you weren't known and far from what you knew. I turn because the sweeping of your feet has stopped behind me to find you on your knees with blood and roadside muck in your hair and eyes. Then kneel in front of you in brimming grass and gather up cold handfuls of the dew to wash you, cousin. I dab you clean with moss, fine as the drizzle out of a low cloud. I lift you under your arms and lay you flat, with rushes that shoot green again, I plait green scapulars to wear over your shroud.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.